in partnership with 320 Festival, Adobe Radio, presents Let's Talk, the 320 Conversations, with your host, Scoggs.
Hey, and welcome to Let's Talk 320 Conversations. My name is Sarah Scoggs. I also host Let's Talk with Scoggs here on Adobe Radio, but I'm extremely excited to bring you this special series around the 320 Festival. This is an online festival, and the event was created to bring awareness to the importance of mental health, provide resources to our community, and normalize the conversation surrounding all mental health pursuits. Through the series, you'll get a chance to meet five incredible panelists. Our first panelist this week is Wesley Geer, and he is the founder of Rock to Recovery. His panel is Music's Effect on Mental Health and Addiction. In this conversation today, he shares a ton of passion, all of his different vantage points and how music has helped people find recovery and how he's found his own recovery. I'm just blown away by all these panelists. I'm excited to share this with you. And you can look forward to Wesley's panel coming up in a few weeks for the 320 Festival. You can go to 320festival.com to get more information. But for now, let's enjoy the episode. So how are you? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing pretty good. I have little moments, you know. Yeah. But mostly I'm okay. This life isn't that much different from my normal life. I'm single. I live at home. I work from home anyhow. So I just don't go to my AA meetings in person. But there's other things that happen that compensate, a lot of Zoom action and a lot of FaceTime calls. And so.
Yeah. So are you in Los Angeles?
I'm in Laguna Beach.
Oh, Laguna Beach. So nice. So if you need a little escape, you know, you have the beach nearby. Oh, I'm so jealous.
I'm right next to the ocean. I just went for a nice 3-mile run and a mile walk after that. And so, yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's friggin' amazing. I'm so lucky because if I go left out my door, I'm one block from the ocean. If I go right out my door, I'm two blocks from endless hills and trails.
Wow. You have the best setup of anyone I've spoken to recently.
Yeah, I do pretty good here in Laguna. That's for sure.
Oh, cool. How long have you lived in Laguna Beach for?
4 years now, but I'm an Orange County guy.
Oh, Orange County. Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. For the most part, except for I did a few years in Massachusetts when my parents divorced. Okay. But yeah.
Well, I first want to thank you for jumping on the phone. I'm excited. The 320 Festival is coming up, and it's such an emphasis on mental health, and this online festival will share different services and resources, and I'm glad that you're here today to talk about your panel and recovery and addiction.
Well, thank you for caring.
And for people who don't know a lot about what you've done and what you've worked on, where do you think the best place is to start in terms of your experience and where you've gotten to today?
I think it's important to, as they say in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff, is to qualify, because this festival is supposed to be mostly for people who are hurting, struggling, found recovery, looking for recovery, want to stay in recovery, some sort of story like that. So when people come in and they're just like, my life is great, oh my God, then the person struggling or, you know, who knows the struggle might not relate. So I think it's always important with these to kind of qualify a little bit of backstory. The idea for Rock Recovery was something, you know, that was a culmination of a little desire from being a young boy of like wanting to teach music. And even in my first band, Head PE, I used to love to teach music theory to the other guys, et cetera, et cetera. It's like something I enjoy doing, sharing music. I get very excited about it. And, you know, we're talking about how you build something. And, you know, they say, you know, eat an elephant one bite at a time. But the thing is that, like, when, why would we even eat an elephant? Usually it's out of desperation. Why would you build a pyramid? You know, it's usually it's out of desperation and or trying to serve something bigger than yourself. And you just do it one step at a time. So I like to say it came out of desperation rather than virtue. I'm not some like saint who was called to serve the world. It was more like, you know, I got the Korn gig as a result of my recovery. I toured around the world totally sober. You know, I got that gig because I was sober. And then Brian aka Head Welch, was coming back to the band, and I was like, holy shit, I'm just gonna say it, what do I do now? I just got the best gig of my life, yay, recovery, look what I got, and now it's going away, what do I do? I'm a kid who struggled through high school, so I didn't have a degree, I don't have a bunch of letters after my name, what do I do? And I really went back to the spiritual practices, which is like, rather than getting self-pity, okay, I'm supposed to be sober, obviously, or else I'd be dead, and I feel like I'm meant to be a musician. How can I be a musician, be sober, and help people? And that was the thing I didn't know was the magic sauce, the secret ingredient in my prayer, in my question to the universe, if you will. How do I help people and make a living? And so the initial desperation was like, if I could make $3,000 a month, pay my bills, it's expensive to live in California, you know, and get by, I was going to be happy. And I circled back to this idea of being in a treatment center myself. I was killing myself with meth and heroin and whiskey and cigarettes and all sorts of, you know, deadly behaviors and addictions. And so in my rehab, they had yoga, they had, you know, painting pictures, which of course you're thinking about the pictures, like it's cool, it feels therapeutic, but none of us are great painters or illustrators, yet it's in here in a therapeutic sense. And so I thought, well, if you can bring that art to people who aren't artists, you can bring music to people who aren't musicians. And that was the idea, is to get people to play music who are not musicians. And I didn't realize how magical that was. I, again, was doing this out of desperation. I wasn't a scientist coming in with studies going, wow, I have a new hypothesis based on this recent study. Wasn't that at all. But what we know now, you know, what I've learned since, is that listening to music, which is traditional music therapy, is most often listening to music. Rock to Recovery is getting people who've never touched an instrument, or if they have, cool, to play, to write, to sing. We help them guide them through that process. And that engages the brain on a whole other level. Listening engages half the brain. Playing, no matter how rudimentary it is what you're playing, engages the whole brain. What it does to brain and body chemistry is exponentially greater than what happens when you listen to music. So that's how it started. It was me carrying a couple of guitars going, hey, I'm going to write a song with you guys. And, you know, I got really scared. I wasn't going to do it at first. Like, I had the idea. So I pitched it for 6 months and people were like, that's a cool idea. Great. You want to hire me? No, thank you. Until I finally got somebody to hire me. And then I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. I'm going to write a song with 12 dudes who've never played. How the F am I going to do this? And I saw that famous TED talk on the why of Apple computers. So I said, hold on, 2 weeks, give me 2 weeks. And I kind of got inspired and I went in there and just started with the why. Why am I here? Get over the fear. And I said, look, guys, I had a problem with heroin, with meth, with whiskey, just like you. I was in treatment just like you. And I want to bring music in. We love music, right? Oh, yeah, we all love music. Yay, right? Okay, well, let's try to figure out a way together. I have this concept. Let's do this together and figure out a way to bring music into a treatment center. This is your group. I'm not going to shove it down your throats. Let's do this together. And from the very first group, there was some really magical transformations that helped me know I was onto something. Mm. And like anything, it reminds me of when I was hanging with Mike from Green Day, the bass player, Mike Dern. And we were out one night long ago and somebody goes, hey man, can you guys tell me how to make it in a band and what do I got to do? It's so hard. And we looked at each other, me and Mike, and we were like, it's not that hard when your band's good, man. And that's kind of the thing with us. It wasn't that hard to sell Rock to Recovery because people were coming out of sessions transformed. The support staff was watching going, wait. This guy doesn't talk to anybody. He doesn't do anything in any group, but you had him up there singing at the top of his lungs a song about, I'm not shooting dope anymore. I don't want to die today, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And they saw how powerful it was. And so that's kind of how it happened. It kind of like caught on like wildfire.
Oh, that's incredible. And how has that been for you sort of as having, you know that music can heal. It's been a part of your life this whole time. So how has it been for you seeing those aha moments and seeing how music has actually been able to help other people who didn't know that it was a resource or that they even had a skill in that sense?
Yeah, it's the most insane high. So you got to imagine like every session I did for 6 months by myself. Nobody knew me going into, treatment centers, which were often at the time residential houses converted, where we're going in the garage. I'm taking a bunch of, detoxing junkies and alkies. And we'd shut the door. And then, they come open in, music, and why is there a guitar here? And then I, share my story, get inspired. At the end, I see them, physically, and I would call my friends that were my other sober buddies in town. What's up, Wes? Dude, I got to see this rock recovery. It's amazing. Like, I'm going in, I'm writing songs. You got to, right on, dude. You go in the meeting later tonight? I'm like, no, you got to understand. It's, and... Everybody I would tell, they'd go, that sounds cool. Yeah, music. I go, no, you got to see it. And since when we would shoot like a video of what we do, like even a mock session video, and I'd have somebody sit in who was very intrigued, they go, whoa, what is that? Because there's some weird thing. They got to understand, it's like, what we explain to the guys, it's like, we're not here to be perfect, and we have a whole pitch we do. Like, music didn't start with a piano falling from the sky and a caveman found it and started ripping Beethoven on the piano. It didn't start with a guitar being found in some crypt in Egypt and the guy started ripping Hendrix solo. It was very rudimentary, expressive, who cares, let's beat on a log together, let's grunt, let's sing. I mean, you can only imagine where it must have started from.
Yeah.
And so humans love to express. So what I always say is we stole our pop music, stole music from the average person, because we get this thing, especially with these ripping YouTubers, we get this thing in our head. If we're not like, Adele or some shredder, we're not musical. It's like, no, music is in you. It is who you are. You are literally walking music in frequency and everything. So we're trying to get you back in tune with that. So anyhow, I'm way off on a tangent now, but what that felt like was magical. It was like incredible. It was unexpected. It was fulfillment. And then, just to switch it, when you're a musician, especially one like me who is a little bit sick and addiction, and you get the ego and the fame, you're trying to feed your ego through music. Do you like my new song? I hope they like the new song. Is it going to get me paid? Are they going to like it? Who likes my video? What to check out my band? You want to buy a CD? There's all that. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Mm-hmm. This was a total, transposing juxtaposition of the whole thing of music, where I'm bringing music to you as a gift so you can enjoy it and like getting a fulfillment from it, which was just incredible.
And how has that been helpful in your recovery and in your journey outside of it being your idea or you being the teacher in that scenario?
Everybody who does rocked recovery, now we got, I don't know, forgive me, 13 or 15 people who do it around the country, who've been trained in this specific methodology we have, they all say excitedly to the new person we're bringing on, this is going to change you. Mm-hmm. And because, you're saying, how did this affect my recovery? Well, all people are scared. Public speaking scares people. Having to perform scares people. Having to write a song and help people on the spot scares people. This fear of being affected scares people. Having to be a leader over and over and over again in the day is scary, and it's daunting and intimidating. So what it, forced me to do is really work through a lot of fears. Mm-hmm. It forced me to have to be okay, because some of these people are really, addiction and mental health, addiction is far beyond just like physically addicted because it was a habit. It's like usually an underlying symptom of trauma or anxiety or fear or whatever, like, issues from childhood that are manifesting in self-medication. So those, take away the drug, alcohol, and those issues are coming out. I'm writing songs with girls who hate men, and they're just like ripping me as I'm trying to like give them this loving gift. And you just got to be able to take it and go, this is their sickness, not mine. And so there's so many elements it helps you grow on and work through. But I think most importantly is what it taught me is that my job isn't to look for happiness. That is like the most, I don't know. It's just not fruitful because happiness comes and goes and comes and goes. That's how life is. What I've learned for me, and I, you know, I'm just parroting a quote somewhere. It's like the goal for me is to find fulfillment, and within fulfillment, I find happiness. So where with music and that lifestyle, and of course, actively in addiction, I wasn't being fulfilled. It was a very sick realm to live in. This fulfilled me from the inside out. I felt like I finally found my purpose in life. Like I'm here to help people. I'm here bringing music. I'm still being creative. And when you find fulfillment, like the word fill is in there. It's filling me up. I'm full. I'm filled. And then when I feel that way spiritually, energetically, happiness blooms from that. Like, you know, the metaphor popping in my head is just like a flower, right? The seeds filled up, it gets watered and it flows out of me. And that's how huge it has been in my life.
And I think that's something a lot of people are looking for, finding what their, you know, their purpose is or how to find a way to connect with their innermost self.
You know what it is? It's service, you know, and I'm not say it's the same thing for everybody. I'm not, because there are different people that have different roles. But talk about, especially within alcoholism and recovery, those kind of like texts and teachings, is that alcoholics are incredibly selfish. It doesn't mean we don't share our pizza or give somebody a ride. It means that we're like thinking about ourselves. We need, do I look stupid? Does that person hate me? Oh my gosh, what I just constantly thoughts of self. Out is to start thinking of others. And when you're in a car wreck of a life with addiction, mental health, like you're disconnected from people, you feel like you can't connect, you're afraid, you got all this wreckage, you got the girlfriend that hates you, the job that fired you, whatever, you're super disconnected. You're in this place, what I call survival mode. You're not going to go like, hey, let me help the old lady cross the street, right? When I feel like I can barely breathe and I'm dying over here. Speaking of metaphors, of course. It seems counterintuitive. But what we learn is like when we can be of service to others, that we get that air we need to breathe. And so there's a lot of spiritual teachings on that, which, you know, are far outside of recovery, which is like, you know, bring love and service into everything you do. Like when I was first in rehab, one of the first things they did is we went to go food shopping. They'd have us help food shop. Why am I helping you? I'm paying money to come here. Bring me my food, bitch. Because it's going to make you feel good to be part of the machine. Okay. And the guy would go, okay, grab the shopping carts. What do you mean? They have people, they pay for that. It doesn't matter. Grab the shopping carts and bring something positive in the world. So whether you're a mechanic or like you're a writer or whatever, to do it not for self, but to be involved in the greater whole. Like, hey, maybe I just clean houses, but I know I'm helping that housewife or that doctor, whatever, that can't clean their house. And we bring that energy to what we do. That's the key, right? If we go, I got to go clean a friggin' house, I'm going to make friggin' $50. This is lame. Yeah, that sucks. But if we can have enough humility in whatever we do, humility to go like, I'm part of something bigger and this is what I do. I'm going to help this person, whether you're bussing a table, you know what I mean? And that's really the key of where it starts.
I completely agree with you. And I think I've just starting to come around on realizing all of those things. And, you know, having that perspective has helped alleviate a lot of stress. And I just wish that I had learned that earlier in life, like in my 20s, I think it would have made things just a whole lot easier. And to have learned that lesson, I'm glad I've come around to it now, of course, but it just would have been so much easier if I had gotten there earlier in life.
We learn when it's our time, because we all start at different places. And you know, gosh, you could name any million elements or reasons why, you know, maybe you come from somebody comes from a dysfunctional household, or maybe we're so in our schoolwork that we just got to focus on that. But we get these lessons when it's time for us to get the lessons, you know, and it's okay. But I think the journey of the young person is to be selfish to an extent and find their way and try things and fail and mess up and get the heart broken learn, you know. So I think we have to be on that self-serving mission to find and define who we are. And then as we start to do that, you know, we can grow more into, you know, what we're meant to be and then giving it away.
Right. And I'm also curious from your perspective, you know, it's easier than ever for someone like me to talk to a friend or my family, or if I'm feeling anxious or I'm thinking I need some help with depression or whatever thoughts are going on, it's easier than ever to ask for help, have that conversation, even open up to friends, you know, what's going on. And obviously we have this entire festival built around resources, panelists that have gone through things and have resources and information. So I'm curious, from your perspective, having been in music for decades, how have you seen that shift and change in being able to have conversations and be open about mental health?
Well, it's tough because my vantage point is I went through the 80s, heavy drinking, 90s, heavy drugs, and getting sober in 2004 the first time. So I don't know what it would have been like to be in the world speaking recovery back when I was actively using. But, you know, I've heard stories and it, you know, you just didn't see articles on it back in the day. You didn't see it all over. I mean, there is an explosion. It's not something you hide away. You know, we hear the stories about how, don't talk about Uncle Bob. Yeah, he drinks too much. Well, don't tell your mother. Well, like, it's not like that. Now it's about rock stars and, quote, powerful and public figures and celebs coming out and sharing their story. And that's a beautiful thing, you know, that the world has gotten to this place where we do want to talk about it. And I think it's because we're sick of watching other people die. And that's why 320 Festival is here. Let's be honest. You know, Chester Bennington was a friend. It's super fucked up. You know, he's no longer with us. Right. Talinda was moved to do something, you know, powerful. Because of that loss, you know, I don't know Talinda's entire story and all that, but it's pretty simple math that's why we're here having this conversation. So, you know, when people get into recovery, there's this beautiful magic that happens, just like the fire that burns down the forest and leaves ashes. The ashes are rife with nitrogen that help, bring nutrients so the forest can grow again. Well, the very thing that makes me feel as an alcoholic who's sober, as an addict who's sober, is to use the story that used to bring me shame and guilt and misery and near death to help other people. So when I talk about getting a record deal, being on meth and, you know, the height of my addiction, yet also the height of my success, that might another musician, you know, or it might help a lawyer go, oh yeah, I used to do tons of blow in law school. I can relate. I was successful, but I was killing myself. You know, my story is how other people will connect. And so instead of hiding it in a closet and being afraid of it and afraid to talk about it, which is how it used to be, now we bring it out in the public. And we could go all the way back to figures like Betty Ford, who was the first lady, who maybe a generation before that would have been like, I ain't telling anybody I got a problem. And instead she's like, hell no, I'm going to make a rehab. We're going to call it Betty Ford, put my name on it. We shine the light on the darkness, and the light is what kills the darkness. Yeah. Shoving the darkness in the dark doesn't help anybody.
Wow, that's really beautiful. I love that. So the idea that we're talking more about things and we're putting things out in front and pulling them out of the darkness. At Adobe, I get to talk to a lot of bands that are just establishing themselves, just releasing music for the first time, and they're starting to tour. So from your perspective, I was curious if you had any words of wisdom to pass on to those folks that are just starting to get their footing in touring, because I can see that it's grueling mentally and physically. So if you had anything to share on how they can take care of themselves, really any advice that you would pass down to take care of your mental well-being and your physical well-being while on tour.
Man, there's so much I could say. Well, one thing that I didn't understand is why I was being singled out on tour. Like, yeah, you drink too much. I'm like, we're all partying here. So if that's happening to you, not in an isolated incident, but if people are kind of pointing at the finger that you're out of control in that world, it might be true. So listen to that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's important for people to open up and talk about how they feel. Very important, you know. And for me, I got to look who I'm hanging out with and really look at my own behavior. Am I seeking out the people who are going to be drinking and drugging all night? Or can I find somebody who is like going to chill? Because there's always, on every tour, usually there's somebody who's a little bit chill. And if there isn't, it's important because whoever we hang out with, that's how we're going to act, right? So for me, you know, the key of my recovery or having the life I have is connecting with people who live the way I want to live it. So if you know you're going on the road with a band that's maniacs and you want to keep it chill, then set up a couple lifelines, you know, a couple people you can call like when the show's done, so you can go jump on the phone and go, man, if I just chat for half an hour, get my shower, that'll get me close enough to bedtime. I don't have to jump in that crazy party mix, you know. I think it's important to have real conversations with your band, and they're tough conversations to have. But if you don't want to go crazy, you got to clear out a safe space. And I know a lot of people who have done that in their bands, like, look, I need to be able to sleep. I don't want to get sucked into party world. If you want to party, cool, but we got to create some sort of balance, and I have to have a place I can go and chill out because we're in this together, and it's not fair to anybody. Just like one half of the band wants to be able to come bust and drink a little bit sometimes, they should be able to do that, but not to the death of the other guy who's trying not to.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about open conversations, really, and people meeting each other halfway.
Yeah. And do you have any advice for someone that's finding they need to have that conversation with their family, their friends, their bandmates, and how you would broach that topic, or just, you know, anything to share from that aspect?
Those are tough conversations to have. I mean, you know, if in a dream world, if we're having a problem and we, man, I think I'm drinking too much or whatever. First thing we got to do is, and in all of this, what we always have to do is make ourselves the strongest. So when we go in to have this conversation or we go talk to the band, we have support and we're not on our own. So maybe find somebody who's sober or somebody who you can confide in everything and let them support you and guide you through it, right? Because if we just go in, well, I'm mad, I'm going to go tell them that I got to be, you know, we got to first kind of deal with our drama, right? So if our own internal drama is like, I think I'm struggling, then get some support for yourself first from people who have experience that can help you and like kind of, you know, give you some experience and some encouragement and some help and some guidance to take into your world. Mm. Just going is not successful, usually.
I can only imagine how difficult those situations and those conversations are to have, because a lot of people in just general have a hard time asking for help. But I know through my own journey with my own mental health and being able to talk about my anxiety and when I'm feeling like, you know, the signs are starting to bubble up for me that I have that rock and I do have somebody that I can talk to, whether it be that I have a therapist at that time or that I just have friends and family I can turn to, it helps immensely. And I can imagine that being on tour and being away from those foundations makes things bigger and a little bit more amplified, and that sort of stress that they're under, I can't even imagine. I think it's also important too that you know, we look up to these musicians and all these people, but it's not as if they're not human and they don't have parts of them that need certain things. And being on the road is really difficult. And I guess it's just as I've gotten older, my awareness to what they go through and the rigorousness of it and what they're sacrificing to tour, it just seems like it's really difficult. And I wish I could do more, and I hope that a lot of these sort of conversations and people like you who are so open and you know, are the catalyst for these conversations will help bring more awareness to that side of it.
The road is not glamorous at all.
Yeah.
Unless you are the Rolling Stones that fly in on your, you know, private plane, walk on stage with everything perfect, and everybody gets their own dressing room, and you got some PA who decorates your dressing room just how you want it. And when you're done, you go off and get in your limo and go to the 5-star hotel. Yeah, that's glamorous, sure. But 98% of the bands, it's not like that.
Right.
Even, you know, with Korn, where we were in very nice hotels. I mean, you know, the nicest hotels. And we had a couple tour buses to, you know, so we weren't so cooped up, and we're headlining shows. Still, you're at a festival all play. You're not sleeping. You're crazy hours and crossing time zones, and you're sitting in a, you know, a little tent room with, you know, Red Bulls and snacks, and you're all alone, and you're just waiting, and you're trying to stay clean, and you're trying to stay, you know, eating some healthy stuff, and you're trying to stay connected. And it's just, it's tough. It wears you out, you know? So I don't know. It's just, it's a tough world to live in. And it's a huge sacrifice for any musician, because again, unless you're some pop star who comes out just top of the charts and lives that life for I'm a rock band guy, and I know rock world, and we go out in vans, we go out in buses, we go out broke. People think that, like, because you get on stage and you got a record out, they're like, oh, you must have a Ferrari, huh? It's like, no, I made $3,000 last month, and then I'm going to go home and I'm not going to make anything for a few months. Hopefully I'll close this merch deal. Should get me about $12,000. And then what, you know, so you're a road dog, you're a soldier, you're a warrior, but you do it. You know, people always love to ask, like, you know, how do you do it? It's like, cause you're called to do it, because you're passionate about it. Cause you can't, I mean, you don't see any other choice than go out and do it. Is it fun? Is it a high? Is there beautiful moments? Sure. Otherwise we wouldn't do it, but it is grind, and it's really mentally taxing. And, you know, it's tough, because you got to be nice to the fans, and or else you're a jerk. But sometimes you don't feel like talking to people, and you're away from home, and you're away from friends, and you're stuck in hopefully a tour bus. A lot of people are in vans. Yeah, and it wears you out physically. It wears you out physically, and it wears you out spiritually. Yeah. You know, so for me, I couldn't sleep unless I drank whiskey, and I didn't realize that. But the night not drink so much, I couldn't sleep at all. And then people ask me, do you got stage fright? No, I don't have stage fright. What are you talking about? Oh, then when I went out with Korn and didn't drink, I was like, holy shit, I am nervous as hell about to play in front of 60,000 people, and I'm freaking out. So I got to get into some deep breathing and meditation. Mm-hmm. The point is, you know, I had a lot of unhealthy coping mechanisms. So if you're not going to go down that, you know, destructive road, you better, you know, back to, like, what do you say to the new better? Your healthy coping, whether it's everybody, I need 20 minutes in the lounge all day so I can meditate certain time of day or whatever, you know, it's important.
Yeah. And in terms of the relationship between an artist and their fan base, as a fan, is there anything that we can do to be more supportive of those who are either struggling and they've been, you know, talking about it, or, you know, even if they haven't been talking about it, what can fans do to be more supportive?
Well, what I would suggest to fans is, like, first know that we all know that we wouldn't be shut up, the fans. We get that. But at the same time, an artist doesn't owe you to get your beck and call when you feel like it, even if you did make your way backstage and whatever, that we're human, and sometimes, you know, we're worn out and we don't want to talk, and to be okay with that. And instead of coming, I all get excited, but instead of coming with expectations, if you really love a band and you really love artists, maybe ask, you know, would you mind? And a lot of fans do, but, you know, I just remember when I had the flu, horrible flu, and it was right when Head PE was starting to sell out clubs, and I slept till the last moment and drove to the club, couldn't even talk, thought I was going to vomit, and some guy goes, hey, what? And I just kind of gave him a nod, like, hey, because I was grimacing from the hell, And then I heard him go, oh, God, he used to be cool. Now he's a fucking dick. And I was like, wow, guy. Like, you know, think about, you know. So I think we got to have a little compassion for the artists, too, and remember that we're allowed to have a bad day. And here's what I know of most artists, just my exposure. I'm not saying all of them, but the ones I'm exposed to. Most are insecure people that had trauma, or drama, or a lot of. And the great artists have that pain, and that's where they draw from. They have so much emotions. So made treat them like you would any other person on the street, and understand that we're humans that have need love and need support, and have a lot of we have a lot of dark backstories, man. So, you know, I don't know how to wrap that up eloquently, but I think if we come from a place of love rather than expectation, a much better place to meet.
I think that sounds right. And I think in general, that's probably really sound advice to share. So the 320 Festival is coming up. I want to make sure that I have, reiterate that you're going to be on a panel and the festival is going to be streaming online. So how are you preparing for the panel, or how do you prepare for these types of discussions?
You know, to be honest, and I don't want to sound cocky, is this easy for me, and it's fun, even though it's a serious topic, because I'm passionate about it.
Right.
And because I think, as you know, maybe if you're a scientist and you're writing books and not interacting with the people so much, awkward positions, we love talk, give us a topic we're passionate about, which, like, recovery and helping other people and rock and roll and music's like, easy, just hit go. And and I think the thing we kind of do is you get on stage, just ask God to guide you, to let the ego, let go of the fear, and just have it be a true form of expression, and show up and be there to support others. This is not about. And with that kind of a mindset and energetic preset, if you will, I think it's going to work out and be a beautiful experience.
Yeah, I'm super excited, and I'm really grateful that I've gotten to chat with you and hear more about it and tune in and snuggle up on my couch with my dog and just learn and hear from all of these incredible panelists.
I think and I don't want to try to pretend that this is the same as that, but what I think most people are finding is there's still something really beautiful happening, again, out of desperation for connection. Even though we're in the digital realm, there's this own soul beauty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if this is all we can get, I think we're holding it onto it that much tighter and really honoring it for what a beautiful experience it is. So we're excited. We're excited to be a part of it. We're of course still heartbroken over Chester and Chris Cornell and all the endless amazing friends, people we've lost, and that will always be the case. But that we can turn it into something that is beautiful and powerful as much and often as possible is our greatest purpose.
Absolutely. And I want to give people a chance to know what else you have going on. I know there's a lot of different things you have going on. I noticed that there's going to be music coming and that sort of thing. So take a moment to let people know where they can find you or learn more about Rock to Recovery and all the other things that you're working on.
Yeah, we have a lot going on. First and foremost, the work we do, which is Rock to Recovery, working with veterans and addicts and, you know, sex trauma and PTSD and all sorts of stuff. You can find us anywhere. It's Rock to T-O, spelt out, Recovery. We're on all the social medias. So you can give us a follow and find out. We do really cool events. We do a sober event as well. And, you can support us. You can donate. We're pretty dynamic and fun on these outlets. We've been posting a lot of cool, like, Zoom videos of jamming and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And as far as me musically, I'm very happy that after a long hiatus, it finally felt right. One of the guys who worked for Rock Recovery at first ended up being a singer who's amazing, and we started doing a music project together, and it's called Human, but it's spelled U3, the threes are E's, right? M3N. So like hue as in color, men as in plural for men, but it's with threes instead of E's, because this day and age, every friggin' name's taken and that's where we're going. So you can find us, and we're releasing stuff. You know, I used to play with Head, P.E. I play guitar in Korn. This is very different from that, but I think it's still really cool. So if you give us a follow or DM us, I'll be sure to say hi.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for taking the time and being so generous in this conversation. And everyone can tune into the 320 Festival and see your panel and see how music has a positive effect on recovery. And I'm just very grateful. So thank you.
It's a pleasure to connect with you. Thank you for the work you're doing. And yeah, super looking forward to what's coming down the road.
Yay. Well, thank you so much. And go wave to the ocean for me, because I haven't seen it in what feels like weeks.
I will go wave to it for you, and make sure you get me this interview. I had a good time, and we'll help share and spread the word.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great day.